Being diagnosed with breast cancer absolutely floored me. I could handle the side effects of chemo by swallowing tablet after tablet after tablet, but I couldn't stop the scary thoughts running through my head. And like many of you, I would lie awake until the small hours of the morning thinking things like, is that it? Am I going to die? When is it going to come back? How am I going to get through this? Well, today, I'm going to help you deal with the tough stuff with the amazing Professor Dame Leslie Fallowfield, who has dedicated her life to helping women like us psychologically deal with a cancer diagnosis. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. I'm embarrassed to say that when I was working as a breast surgeon, it never crossed my mind to discuss the psychological impact of breast cancer with my patients. But like many of you listening, I had no idea how badly breast cancer would affect my mental health or the relationship with my family and friends. And I've had over 100 questions from you all this week, asking for tips to help you cope with the roller coaster that is breast cancer. This week's guest is Professor Dame Leslie Fallowfield. Now, she's an expert in the field of psychosocial oncology, which is quite a mouthful. All it means is that she's learned how to help you deal with the scary thoughts in your head, work out how to talk to people about cancer, and get the support that you really need. She taught me how to listen to my patients so I could give them what they need. And today, she's going to help me answer all your questions to get you through the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Liz. And hello, everybody listening.
I can't believe you're actually here. It's such a privilege to be able to talk to you. I know you haven't had cancer yourself, like some of my guests, but your life has been touched by it. Can you tell us what led you to the world of psycho-oncology?
Okay, yes. Well, how long have you got? I started off life as a nurse, and I was always interested in talking with patients. Then I went back to university and I did a degree in neuroscience and psychology. And I did a PhD looking at the way in which different sorts of demyelinating diseases like multiple sclerosis, affected vision. And during that time, I was a mature student. My absolute bestest friend, who was 32 and had little kids the same age as mine, helped me a lot with school runs and everything. She developed acute myeloid leukemia. And she died from the side effects, actually, of a bone marrow transplant. These were the early days of bone transplantation. And she actually said to me, you're meant to be so clever. Why don't you measure something important instead of eyes? And I said, but I am doing something important. I said, what do you mean? And these are the days where we didn't talk about quality of life and basically surgeons just told you what you were going to have done to you. You didn't really have joint decision making. And I sat in the car park at the Royal Marsden Hospital and cried. I still know the car parking bay I sat in. And she did die a couple of weeks later. And the following Sunday, in one of the Sunday newspapers, there was an article by a surgeon called Michael Baum. And he actually said in this article, the psychological aspects of breast cancer are still poorly understood. So I phoned up his secretary, made an appointment to see him, told him I wanted to do research in the area. He thought I was completely bonkers. But as I was sort of leaving and I said, oh, I know you think I've wasted your time, Professor Baum, but I absolutely promise you that I am going to find someone somewhere in the world who'll give me a job and I'm going to make a difference in the world of breast cancer and all cancers if I can. And he said, oh, right, okay. And he phoned me up a week later, gave me a job. The rest is history. So that was 1984.
Wow.
I'm very old, everybody.
Rubbish. I think it's just so important that we realise we're not just treating a breast, we're treating a woman. And I had no idea that this field existed when I was a breast surgeon. We've had so many questions for you, and I wanted to start with this one from Ola, who said, I'm scared. I'm worried that immunotherapy will give me bad side effects, and I haven't had my PET scan yet, and I'm frightened. How do you cope with the overwhelming information when you've just been diagnosed?
Well, first of all, Ola, breathe. Okay, breathe. And remember that you don't actually have to make every decision right away. There is a lot of information, particularly when you're newly diagnosed. I think you enter this strange world with esoteric words and concepts that you've never come across before. And it can be very overwhelming. And all this new information, of course, is set against a backdrop of quite reasonable fear and anxiety. If you feel anxious and scared about it, that's actually normal behaviour. You'd be a bit odd if you didn't. But I think the important thing to remember is that I often say this, and I think this is really important for everybody listening. Breast cancer is not a medical emergency. It is an emotional emergency, but it's not a medical one. If you actually need another week to sift through the information, talk to other people, think about what's going to be in your best interests, then take it. It's not going to affect the outcome hugely in the future for you, and you'll feel better if you've understood what you've agreed to happen. The management policies are very different for different types of breast cancer, but you can take your time. And if you're still not getting the answers that you need to some of your questions, do contact the really excellent breast cancer support charities like Breast Cancer Now. Macmillan's got a good site as well, and they've all got really good nurse counsellors who'll talk you through things as well. So please don't panic. And as far as immunotherapy is concerned, one of the great things, if you like, about the modern day treatments is that they're much more targeted. You're more likely to be offered treatments that are genuinely going to help your type of cancer. When you look at the side effects of immunotherapy, they are not actually always as bad as some of the other treatments. It's just that very rarely there can be some rather nasty ones. But I think try and think positively. Rare things are rare, common things are common, and focus on that.
That is great advice. And as someone who reads all the side effects and imagines she will have them, I'm a pessimist. It's really good to remember you don't get them all, and most people don't. Thank you so much for that, Leslie. Now, one thing some of our listeners like Becky have to deal with is having one or both breasts removed. And I found this hard. And Gwen sent us this voice message.
I am having a single mastectomy next week, and I've taken all of the news really well so far, but there's a rising, bubbling feeling inside me that living with one boob is going to be weird in a way that I can't even imagine. And I wondered if there's anything I can do to prepare for losing one breast. I'm putting it in the bin. That's what I like to say. So I'm putting my boob in the bin next week. How is that going to affect me? What's that going to feel like? What do other women say it feels like? So, thank you.
Wow, well, that's a really complicated question to unpick, I think, because, you know, women are as different as the breast cancers that they have. And it's very difficult, I think, sometimes to predict how someone's going to react. I guess the important thing, though, to think about is you are more than your breasts. I mean, you will still be you. It's a very rare person who defines themselves entirely in terms of body image. Body image is very important to a lot of people, and it's not just vanity. I don't mean to suggest that. But I think actually self-talk, that people who love and value you will still love and value you. It's very unlikely that they only love and value you because of your boobs. And people react very strangely and surprisingly. I'm the patron of an organisation called Flat Friends. And this was actually started by a woman who had a mastectomy. And she went to see her surgeon, who wanted to talk to her about breast reconstruction. And she said, well, I don't want reconstruction. I want you to remove the other breast. I'd rather be flat. And she was sent to see a psychiatrist. And anyway, this was not an uncommon reaction. And she sort of got a whole group of people together who decided they wanted to be flat and stay flat. Some people said, I've never liked my boobs very much. They've always been too big or floppy. They get in the way when I play tennis or whatever. So that's one reaction. The other is that if you feel deeply distressed by it, of course, you might be offered a reconstruction. It's worth taking your time, though, not having one immediately, because, as I say, you won't know how you're going to react to it until it happens. And breast reconstruction is quite a major operation, and it doesn't necessarily give you a breast that feels like a breast. It's just that your clothed appearance will probably be better without it if you're somebody who has a very strong body image. So I think, you know, all I can say to you is, well, good luck with it. Try and remember that you're more than your breasts. The reasons for doing it are to really give you a good chance of living longer and hopefully curing you. Remember, most surgery, if it's done by good people, will actually cure you of early breast cancer.
I so agree. And I think as someone who's had, I had a reconstruction for vanity, and I felt guilty that vanity was a reason to have an implant because I used to wear V-neck dresses. And when I had to have my breasts removed when my cancer came back, I remember walking through department stores crying, thinking, what on earth am I going to wear to hide it? Because I didn't wear a prosthesis. It took months to let my husband look at me naked. But 5 years down the line, I'm a proud uni boober and I don't care. And I think it's that what you feel in the beginning will change and will heal in time. And it's just, you have to go with what you feel is right for you at the time. But I hope you can get through it. Now, I think it's so important to have faith in your team and trust that they're doing the right thing, especially when there are so many alternative therapies and you can feel really anxious. I had this, but they had that. Have you got any tips just to help us believe that we're having the right treatment?
Oh, gosh, isn't that a get? I mean, these are fantastic questions. One of the things I suppose that is really important to stress is that because of the incredible advances that have been made by all the clever scientists in our understanding of breast cancer, we now know it to be many, many different sorts of diseases. So the fact that one woman is going to have one form of treatment and the one in the next bed is going to have another, that doesn't mean to say that one of you's got an idiot treating you and the other's got somebody who's right up to the mark. It's just that your breast cancer is likely to be different. So that's really important for everybody to remember at the beginning. The second thing to remember is that although everybody criticises our health service and everything else, most people in most Western countries all adhere to carefully constructed guidelines about treatments. So it's very, very likely that your own cancer team are going to be using the same guidelines that somebody at a big famous London teaching hospital or a big centre in France or New York or wherever will be using as well. Indeed, next month I go to a meeting in Lisbon where we every 2 years get together and formulate the guidelines to be used in Europe. So I think if you're going to a normal NHS cancer centre, trust the team because it's very likely that they will be using the guidelines that everyone else is using in the Western world. And the second thing to remember is that if it differs from Mrs. Smith down the road or, you know, what your aunt had sort of 10 years ago, it's probably because treatments have moved on and we know more about your particular type of breast cancer.
That's so true. breast cancer is one of the specialities that is based heavily on trials. Nothing we do happens unless it's been evidence-based and guidelines. So, yeah. I've had several questions from women struggling to get through chemo, which I can completely resonate with. The thought of driving myself to the next session, knowing I would feel awful afterwards, was so hard to do. Diane asked us for coping strategies to get through chemo when you're finding it tough and there are a lot more sessions still to come. And then Priyal sent us this voice note.
Hi Liz, my name is Priyal and I'm a 34-year-old doctor from Australia, recently diagnosed with stage 2A breast cancer, currently undergoing chemotherapy. My question is, how do you stop yourself from thinking about the worst case scenario or recurrence and learn to live in the present? Something I've been struggling with during this treatment process. Thank you.
Again, wow, these questions are amazing. And I mean, if we just think about it from a sort of ordinary behavioural point of view, it is, of course, very likely that whatever you are going to do, if it hurts you in some way, you try and avoid it. That's ordinary behaviour. You avoid things that hurt and you are attracted to things that make you feel good. To actually go and have a treatment for several months that you know hurts in different ways afterwards, it's actually forcing you to do a behaviour that isn't actually natural for most human beings. So we have to think of a lot of different things to consider. I think really displacement activities, particularly our last caller about thinking about, if you like, all the awful things, you know, I think one has to try and force oneself to think positively. This is what I'm going through now for a benefit later on. And that's easier said than done, I absolutely know. So I think it's focusing on what the positive benefits are, trying to remember all the things that the specialist nurses, the chemo nurses, suggest you should do immediately after you've actually had your chemo. Rest up a little bit for that first day. You do get very tired. And of course, if you get sick, I mean, make them give you something different, because there are a lot of different anti-sickness treatments that are really good, some of them. And they don't always give you the best ones. So sometimes because of cost, sometimes because they just think if you don't complain, they don't do anything about it. Really making your cancer team know that you're struggling so that they can offer you some of the ameliorative interventions, the sort of ways to help you deal with the physical things, and keep yourself focused on the long game here. You know, we would not be offering chemotherapy to people if it wasn't likely to really give you an added chance of keeping that cancer away.
Again, such incredible advice. And I wish I'd heard this during chemo, because I suffered in silence with horrific nausea and constipation. I knew it was meant to make me feel like shit, so I felt like shit at home when I got told off. For those of us who are clueless like me, can you just explain what a displacement activity is?
Okay. Displacement activity is what the moment you start thinking or feeling something that is negative, force yourself to do something that's distracting, basically, and usually something more positive. So it's a bit like, you know, before you sort of give a child or a baby sort of an injection, you sort of distract them with a teddy bear or make them laugh or something. And certainly we know with things like pain, if you can distract people with displacement activities, they don't normally feel pain quite so acutely. It doesn't always work, but it's worth a try.
The one resounding theme for so many people was the anxiety about the fear of recurrence. And I had several years of waking up every day thinking, is this the day it comes back? And when social media is full of women dying or it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, it can be so triggering. And these are just a few of our listeners' comments. Gemma said that she's suffering with anxiety and panic attacks now her treatment is finished and she just can't get over it. Shelley said that she knows she should be feeling better the further she gets away from her diagnosis, but she's actually feeling the opposite, as if she's a ticking time bomb waiting for something to happen before she reaches that magical 10-year milestone. And Aileen asked, how am I meant to cope knowing that it could come back whilst dealing with the effects of treatment to my body? I know there's a lot to go on there, but how can we cope with that anxiety, that scanxiety?
Well, scanxiety, yes. I mean, let's try and unpick anxiety. I mean, again, some forms of anxiety are actually a really good behavioural instinct, you know, sort of in the days when we had to flee a saber-toothed tiger, feeling anxious would make you sort of run a bit more quickly. But I guess in the modern day, we don't see many saber-toothed tigers, but breast cancer probably is symbolically rather similar. The trouble is, running away, having sort of palpitations and a panic attack isn't going to help. So if it's really severe and completely overwhelming your everyday functioning, thoughts, way of being, then probably you do need to ask your specialist nurse or your oncologist if they can refer you on to a psychologist. If it's really, really bad and affecting sleep and everything else, your GP might be able to offer you some anxiolytics. We call them anti-anxiety pills. But probably one of the best things that you can do is find some other self-management. Again, distraction, displacement activities. Try and actually do things that really you have to concentrate and focus on that stop you thinking about all these negative things. I think also cognitive behavior therapy, which perhaps we ought to spend some time talking about, is really important as well and has been shown to probably be better than actually taking pills. But if it's really severe, you probably do need referral on to somebody who is an experienced counsellor who can help. Try and normalise the feeling as well. You're not mad to actually feel frightened that it might come back, because sadly it might. But what we've got to actually do, rather than just ignore it, is face it head on and find ways of acknowledging that that could happen. But what are the things I can do that will help me stop feeling all the time that I'm just that walking time bomb?
For me, dying of breast cancer was the elephant in the room. And when it came back the first time, I had to get my husband to admit that I could die before him, and we got our wills done, and it was like, okay, it's now done, I can move forward. I needed him to accept it. And I used to worry about the odds. The odds of me being alive in 10 years are like 40%, and this is terrible. But now I realise we're all going to die, and it's 50-50 whether I die of breast cancer or not, and it's basically out of my control. But it takes time to get to that point, and I still get days when I wobble. But you mentioned CBT, and I've had it, and I felt guilty that I couldn't cope with breast cancer as a breast surgeon, and I needed therapy to help. Can you tell us a bit about what it is and how we can get it and what it can do for us?
Cognitive behaviour therapy is a talking therapy that helps you process what's going on, understand, well, when this happens and I start thinking that these sorts of things happen, and gives you lots of practical ideas that will fit for you as a person to sort of overcome them. So for some of us, breathing exercises, yoga, those sorts of things are going to be very helpful and therapeutic. For others, massage, aromatherapy can help relax you enough so that you take away all the sort of worst emotions that are an effect of the thoughts that you're having. I'm probably making it sound very simple, but it's actually quite complicated for you as a therapist to offer. So not everybody can do it. The waiting lists on the NHS are quite lengthy for it, but some people actually think it's worth paying for a short course. It's not sort of going to be, you know, as long as your chemotherapy, but it gives you lots of practical tips and advice as to how you can manage these negative thoughts, turn them into something more positive, and prevent the physical and emotional reactions that you have to those thoughts.
It can also help with the side effects of the menopausal treatment. So again, it's not just for dealing with what's inside your head.
Absolutely. For the audience who aren't sort of medically minded, there's something called Cochrane reviews. And these are basically some really, really clever people who all sit around for days and months and weeks reading all the research papers and then actually tell you which sorts of research really, really has had an effect on things. And the great thing that we know about cognitive behavior therapy is it trumps just about everything else that is a negative effect of breast cancer. So we know that it can help those people who don't sleep very well. We know that it can actually help people who are getting really bad hot flushes or night sweats. It can actually help reduce pain as well. So you've got absolutely nothing to lose by giving it a go.
It can be a complete game changer, and I'm having therapy at the moment to help me cope with my second recurrence, and I'm lucky that my local Macmillan Centre offers free counselling for cancer patients, and some Maggie centres do. But Lucy asked us, how can she find a specialist in psychological cancer therapy who's actually worked with women with breast cancer? She's had so many counsellors, but they seem to be overwhelmed with the volume of issues, and how do you find someone who just gets it?
It's like anything else. I mean, we should have a checker trade, shouldn't we? It's easier to get a reliable, recommended plumber, I think, than sometimes somebody who offers the sorts of things you specifically need. Your GP might sometimes help with that. You can go to the British Psychological Society and look at their list of accredited psychologists who offer different types of therapy for different types of situations. So what you're trying to get is somebody who really can focus, as you've just said, on cancers. And you mentioned, thank you for mentioning them, Liz, because I should have done, Maggie's Centres, Macmillan, they might well be able to direct you to people who are more able to give that sort of specialised help.
And it can make a difference. So I hope that helps, Lucy. But now I wanted to talk about something that never crossed my mind, as I said in the beginning, how cancer affects our relationships with family and friends. And Susan sent us this message.
I'm just about to start chemo. I recently had a mastectomy. I've been told by my oncologist that my hair will definitely fall out. I know if I don't go out and meet people and do things, I'm going to spend the next 6 months hiding at home, but I actually can't find the mental capacity to face people. I haven't really told many people about my illness, and I don't know how to navigate this, because people are going to know for sure when they look at me that I have chemo due to my bald head and probably no eyelashes or eyebrows. So it's just how to navigate that. I'd really like some help, please.
Some of these questions are quite heart-wrenching, honestly. Of course you feel worried, but again, it's rather like the lady earlier on who mentioned about how is everybody going to react, how is she going to feel when she's got one breast? You are more than your hair, and people who love you will accept you, whatever, and hiding away is not going to help. What sorts of things can I recommend? There's a very good organisation called Look Good, Feel Better that actually get lots of very fancy products from all the big cosmetic companies and teach you how to make up false sort of eyebrows and everything. Track them down. Your specialist nurses, they differ. Some of them are very good at teaching you how to put on different sorts of headgear that can make you feel a little better. The Trevor Sorby group of hairdressers used to be really good. Trevor Sorby himself used to offer free of charge to cut the wigs of people, because often the wigs that you're given don't look sort of very much like the sort of hair you want to have. But their salons, certainly I know the one in Brighton still does it, often will offer, you know, help with cutting a wig so it feels a bit more like you. But not everybody can wear wigs. So some people just brazen it out. And you never know, you might just find that if people do accept you, that you like going out, still go out. I mean, you might find you don't need a wig, you don't want to wear a baseball cap or a sort of fancy sort of headdress or whatever. I think that's all I can suggest. I don't want to minimise it, but you are more than your hair, just as you're more than your breast.
It is about faking it until you make it sometimes and realise no one's probably looking at you because they're all worried about how we look ourselves. But sometimes the reactions of family and friends can be really difficult to cope with. Deanna, Claire and Katie have all had close family members tell them to get over it and move on because treatment is finished and they don't have breast cancer anymore. And I know they're not alone. Most of the collateral damage from breast cancer is invisible to the people who love us. How do we cope when our family and friends say that to us?
Well, as you know, Liz, my research team and I have recently made a film called They Just Don't Know What to Do or Say. This was the result of a survey of women who had metastatic breast cancer that had returned. So, you know, some of the equivalent sorts of quotes that they told us about would be, you got over it once before, you'll get over it again, you know, that sort of thing. Essentially, in this survey that we did, we asked women to tell us what family and friends had done that helped or had hindered. And some of the quotes did make us cry, quite honestly. So we made this film, which is basically for the general public. It's not for people with breast cancer, it's for the general public. We sort of split things up into different sections of the, you know, emotional reactions, the apparently callous things that some people said. You know, things like, I'm so sorry to hear about your breast cancer, but, you know, we've all got to die of something and I could get run over by a bus tomorrow. How could anyone think a comment like that could possibly help? And of course, it isn't that people mean to be unkind. It is sometimes that they just don't know what to say or do. And I often say to people when they say, I don't know what to say to her, she's, you know, got cancer. And I say, well, you know, the Almighty gave you two ears and one mouth. And we should sometimes use them in that ratio. Listen is often that people wish to listen. So you will find that people will come out with the most ridiculous things. I mean, there's the avoiding people altogether, which sometimes happen. And that's actually because, again, they're frightened of saying the wrong thing or don't know what to say. There's the saying the really stupid thing. And then there's the people who feel like there's a miracle cure just round the corner that none of these clever doctors who've been treating you know about. I think you should drink, you know, a pint of kale every day, you know, the purveyors of snake venom. I mean, and they send people all these, you know, ridiculous things they've got off the internet, you know, about sort of magical wonder cures, which most doctors who specialise in breast cancer, if these really worked, wouldn't hesitate from giving them to you. I'd like to try and suggest that one perhaps should be generous to people, not automatically think they're being horrid and callous, but that they've just, you know, really got foot in mouth syndrome. They just don't know what to say. We need the support of our family and friends. I mean, we don't live in social vacuums. We need them. And I think sometimes we've got to be brave about actually saying to people when we need help and what we want them to do and when we'd like to talk about how scared or unhappy we're feeling, or when we'd like to actually sometimes inhabit a non-cancer world. I think sometimes it's not that you always want this to happen, but sometimes seeking out the friends who don't spend their entire time, you know, with a head on their shoulder looking sadly at you like you're some sort of like thing to be pitied. And yeah, exactly. And really want you to still engage with the non-cancer world. Sometimes you need those people, you know, so pick your friends, pick your relatives. You know, people don't change their spots very much. They tend to be just as they've always been. And when you need a bit of a shoulder to cry on, find that person And when you want to go out and party, find that one.
Yeah. And the video is brilliant for anyone to watch. And if you've got friends who don't know what to say, you could get them to watch and just realize the impact words can have and what they can say better. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can find it on YouTube. You've been inside my head, Leslie. I've been through all of that. And it's true, there are some friends who are incredible, but I had to tell my husband what I wanted and cope with his jealousy because I spent all my time chatting to people who've got cancer, who understood it, and he felt left out that I wasn't sharing that part of my life with him. And it's, you kind of have to see it from their side as well. But I wanted to just focus on, I guess, what's now called ghosting. I was amazed at friends I'd been close to for a long time who just couldn't stay in touch because what was happening to me was too painful. And a girl I hadn't seen since I was 13 knitted me a Wonder Woman doll. You can see behind me. Ruth was just one of several women who just didn't know how to cope when her friends started to ignore her. Should we just forget about them or should we try to get the friendship back on track?
That's a really difficult one. I mean, I suppose, you know, my first thoughts would be, why are they doing this? It's often a surprise who rallies round and who disappears. I mean, it isn't just when you have breast cancer. I think it's something that happens, you know, whenever, you know, life's tragedies affect us all. I mean, unfortunately, breast cancer isn't the only thing sometimes people have got to cope with. They have to cope with divorces, bereavements in the family at the same time as their breast cancer. And those sorts of behaviours occur then as well. Charitably, I think one way of understanding it can sometimes be that people find that they are identifying with you. And every time they see you, they think, oh my God, that could happen to me. It might not even be that conscious, but it's almost like, oh, I'll avoid them because, you know, sort of, I can't bear to think that I too could share that sort of fate. There are others who perhaps were always fair weather sailors. You know, we don't always know people as well as we actually think we do. I guess, again, it's just a case of if you want to confront them, you can say, look, I really still need you around. Perhaps they're people who find the emotion difficult but can offer you some practical help. They're a good cook or they've got a car and they don't mind dropping you off. Sometimes people quite like having things to do for you if you ask them rather than, you know, the talky bit which they find too difficult. But at the end of the day, I think that you can't always change other people. Hold close to you the ones that are there for you. And, you know, if others disappear, well, maybe it wasn't worth anything anyway.
Yeah. Wow. Again, thank you so much, Leslie. This has been amazing. And I'm sorry to all the listeners if I didn't have time to read out your questions. We might have to get Leslie back. But have you got any final tips to help anyone out there who might be struggling at the moment?
Final tips? Well, again, I think sort of use your friends and family if they're able to cope with it. Trust your healthcare professionals that are looking after you. Don't get tempted onto some of the sites that Dr. Google will show you about, you know, a wonder cure that exists somewhere else on. And actually believe in yourself. Don't get too despondent when you have very, very down days. You know, up days will come as well. And try and keep the positivity going. The future goal is going to be worth the undoubted pain you're going through at the moment. I just think you've got to give yourself a break. Breast cancer ain't fun. Treatments, though, have got better. And just trust yourself. You are still you. You're not defined by your breasts or your hair. That's all I can say, really.
I'm going to keep you in my pocket every day from now on and listen to those words again and again. Thank you so much, Leslie. This has been brilliant.
My pleasure and good luck, everybody. Hang on in there. Just breathe.
So that was Professor Dame Leslie Fallowfield, and God, I wish I had her on speed dial whenever I start to get scared. But just listening to her answer your questions has helped me come to terms with my latest recurrence, and I really hope she was able to help you too. Thank you so much for all your questions. We've had so many, and I'm really sorry if I couldn't get yours in. My takeaway this week is that it's all about communication. And you may find that just admitting you're scared to someone else can take a huge weight off your mind. The video she mentioned about how to talk to anyone with stage 4 cancer is a brilliant watch, and I'll put the link in the show notes. I've personally recommended it to several people to help them learn what to say and how to act around people they know with cancer. I'd love to know if you found it useful. And now it's time for our poem of the week from Donna Ashworth, our podcast poet, and her brilliant new book, Wild Hope, is like a daily boost of comfort. And today's poem is no exception.
Hang on. There are times, and there will be more, when answers are simply not within reach. And that's okay. They're not supposed to be. I think these times are for practicing hope, for believing, for surrendering to the knowing that a plan will emerge, that a path will appear, that a way through will simply transpire, given space and time to form, that life will move on, placing you exactly where you are supposed to be, just as the ocean will always deliver that message in a bottle to a beach. Sometimes we are not supposed to know. We are supposed to believe, to hope, to hang on. Just hang on, my friends. Hang on.
Oh, that was just lovely, wasn't it? That was Donna Ashworth reading Hang On from her book Wild Hope. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems, find out more about today's guest, Professor Dame Leslie Fallowfield, or any of the issues she raised, whether you want to watch the video about how to talk to someone with cancer, or send me a question to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. Next week, I'm going to tell you how to cope with the menopausal side effects of breast cancer treatment, and I'll be joined by the amazing Professor Anise Mukherjee. She's a consultant endocrinologist and menopause specialist who, like me, has also had breast cancer herself.
Feeling exhausted, tired all the time is something that many adults, men and women of all ages, can get. Sleep disturbance, fatigue, overwhelm, anxiety, depression, they're not specific to menopause. And of course, if you're going through a cancer diagnosis, that's a major life event. So those symptoms might be related to your change in hormones, but they may also be related to everything around that, the overwhelming situation you're in.
I'm Dr. Lisa Reardon. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.